Hello and welcome in to another episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult, the show where potential went to die. I am your host, Ellie Michaels.
I'm your host, Jessica Michaels.
And today we're talking about hyperfixations. Like, in general, or like I get to talk about something I got way too into?
Well, in general, we'll define, how's that? So, in general, hyperfixation is something that a neurodivergent person becomes intensely focused on, often for a short period of time, which could be days, could be weeks, it could be months. It might be related to a lifelong special interest, but it might not. It doesn't have to be. But often part of the ADHD tax, as we say, is that you get hyperfixated on something. So you buy all of the things that you need to do the craft or to, you know, execute the project or whatever it is. And then one day you just never touch them again for the rest of your life. You just hope that hyperfixation comes back around again so that, you know, you can take advantage of all of those things you've purchased. But they are a huge part of the neurodivergent experience. Another huge part of the neurodivergent experience can be info dumping, which is often related to a special interest or a hyperfixation. And that is simply the act of affection that is sharing all of the things that you know or have learned about a particular topic. And it is something that we are pretty famous for, I would say, in the Michaels household. We tend to communicate a lot through info dumps. And so today we are doing the first in a recurring series of hyperfixation spotlights, or an info dumping. And I'll have to come up with a catchy name for them. But Ellie is going to take the first swing at giving us a window into one of her hyperfixations. And I'm so excited.
Okay, so that's like my favorite meme about, like, when someone is about to tell you about something they're really passionate about, and when they clap their hands and go, okay, so you're like, oh, this is gonna be good. Okay, so that again, Star Trek, been a special interest of mine for years and years and years. I was always a fan. Got more into it in the past few years as we entered the golden age of Star Trek. You know, I got my Starfleet Delta tattoo on the shoulder there. But specifically, there is an animated adult humor cartoon Star Trek that's actually show run by one of the guys who did Rick and Morty. And the powers that be at Paramount came to him and said, hey, we want you to run our, like, animated kids show or something. And he's like, great. I also have an idea for, like, an adult comedy show. Can I do that too? And they said, okay, we want you to run two shows for us. And so this guy, Mike McMahon, came up with this show called Star Trek Lower Decks. And the idea is, it's like Star Trek The Next Generation, but instead of the weird space thing being the A plot, the weird space thing is the B plot. And the A plot is like the interpersonal stories. Like, Mike McMahon actually wrote the Twitter account way back in the day when that was like a, you know, cool thing to do, TNG season 8. And it was like jokey premises for the uncreated 8th season of Star Trek The Next Generation. So stuff like Data and Geordi bring back the idea of No Shave November, and Worf fears dishonor from his patchy mustache. Like, that kind of stuff is what the A-plot of these stories are. And the other thing is that Mike McMahon is a really bad liar. Like, he is really, really bad at it. And right when the show was first coming out, I was a Patreon of the Star Trek podcast Mission Log. And they had Mike McMahon on for a Patreon exclusive interview where he was lying through his teeth. And I could just tell. I may have been a little bit manic at the time, but meds are better now. And I couldn't figure out what he was lying about. It didn't make any sense. And then I started watching ad spots that they were putting out for all these different Star Trek shows. And almost all of them were one of the actors from one of the shows talking about something that they enjoyed about filming the last season, except for the ones for Lower Decks, where it was all of the voice actors being very, very on book and like everything but like reading from a note card and holding up today's newspaper, like super strict, can't give anything away. I'm like, okay, so he's a terrible liar, but he has something to hide. And to the point where the staff and the writers and the actors can't talk about what they've shot. So this has to be something involved. Mike McMahon knows something here. And what I figured out is that Mike McMahon had access to the upcoming scripts for the coming up seasons of all of the different Star Trek shows. So at the end of like the first season of Lower Decks, the big bad fight involves the Pakleds, and they have this ship that has like, you know, Dr. Octopus arms that come out and grab a thing. And a year later, the season finale of Star Trek Discovery, the big bad guy ship had the same tentacle arms. And so he's making these little nods and these little nudges about like, hey, this is what's coming up. And I thought that was really fascinating. And at the time I was like, I will tweet about this. And thus Mike McMahon will notice me and give me a writing job. Yeah. Like I said, may have been a bit manic, but.
Which is, that all worked and you're here now.
Yes. Yeah. No. Of course. Yeah.
I have been trying to like find a way to get a word in, maybe to define some terms or to explain some things to people who perhaps are not Star Trek fans. And this is the first time you've breathed. And so I haven't had a chance to say anything. So at this point I can just say, you should watch some Star Trek. The Next Generation might be a good place to start because Lower Decks is hard to watch, I think. Not as funny as it could be if you haven't seen other Star Trek, but I think it does stand on its own, so you could certainly start there. It is quite funny, but a lot of in-jokes for sure. All right, keep going. Keep taking us on this ride.
All right, so the other thing that I noticed in that interview with Mike McMahon is he said that he had in mind an ideal 8-season arc. And that struck me as super weird because traditionally the goal of a Star Trek show is to get 7 seasons and then a couple of movies. You know, that's what Next Generation did. That's what Voyager did. That's what Deep Space Nine did. They didn't get a movie. That's what Enterprise was gonna do. But why 8? 8 just doesn't sit right. That's not the pattern. So I looked into it and I found something called the 8 Stages of Psychosocial Development, which was a model developed by this guy, Eric Erickson, who was a psychologist, psychiatrist, one of those, back in like the 60s. And this model, the point was that like humans don't grow and develop in a vacuum. They are helped or hindered in their emotional development by the society around them, specifically by the attitudes of their authority figures and then later on their peers. And these 8 stages are all named for the crisis or like the central question of that period of your life and your emotional and social development. So like the first one is trust versus mistrust, and then it's autonomy versus shame, and then initiative versus guilt, and industry versus inferiority, and on and on and on and on. And so like I started looking at these and I noticed that there was only 2 seasons on at the time, and they matched up to the first 2 stages of this developmental model. So the first one is trust versus mistrust, and that's supposed to happen when you're like an infant. And it's also really fascinating to find out that the way that the authority figures and your parents and the other adults around you, the way they act and react to how you act, even like at the infant stage, starts to affect how your brain works for the rest of your life. So the first crisis is trust versus mistrust. You know, the child is helpless and they need to trust the outside forces for constant and consistent care. So like the central question or the crisis is, can I trust the people and the world around me? The way that you determine that is through feeding, is being fed. And if you are fed regularly and you learn that you can trust the people around you, you develop hope.
So would you say that that's like your parents' first chance to really like F you up for your entire life?
The first of many.
Okay. Yeah. Producer Matt is somewhere in the background, hopefully you know, either taking good notes or crying silently into his keyboard. So this is the first chance that you have to be screwed up forever and ever and ever if your parents mess this up. Okay, got it.
Exactly, exactly.
It's a lot of crying. Just I'm crying nonstop.
So stage one lasts from like infancy to about 1.5 years old. And like I said, the central question being asked is, can I trust the people around me? And in the first season of the show Lower Decks, the main character, one of the four main characters, Mariner, her answer to can I trust anyone is no. And especially authority. She's learned that she can't trust authority at all. And if you look at it the way the show is structured and what the timeline fits at, her parents, when she was an infant to like 1.5 years old, were probably like mid-ranking Starfleet officers. So they were like off on separate missions and doing stuff until they later kind of settled into the more stable positions of a captain and an admiral. But even then, they're still separated. Like they're happily married, but one of them works and lives on Earth and the other one's on a ship off doing stuff out in the galaxy. So if somehow her life was stable at the very beginning of her childhood, even still, everything from that has been like this ongoing life of conflict. And a really strong theme through all of these seasons is that she's basically being like reparented through all of this. And it's happening not because of authority figures or being in Starfleet or her parents even, it's her peers and her friends. So it's the psychosocial development, it's the social part that's really important. So like, since the stage one is all about being fed, there are almost no depictions of eating in the first season. She eats some noodles at one point, but that's as like buffer food because she's going out drinking with a Klingon later. And you find out very clearly that the Klingon did not have any buffer food because he gets very, very drunk and does embarrassing things. And, you know, that could be a nod to Paul F. Tompkins's first stand-up special, Driven to Drink, where he not only talks about how much he loves Star Trek and how cool it would be to be on Star Trek, which is why he got a role on this show. But also he ends the thing with, you know, go out drinking.
I also think it would be very, very cool to be on Star Trek. We just say that again for the universe, just in case. I think it would be very cool to have a role on Star Trek. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's all you got to do?
Yeah, apparently.
Great. I'll wait for the phone call.
No, seriously, like they were talking about starting the official Star Trek podcast, and he said something about it on Twitter. And he's been known as a public figure who really likes Star Trek enough that the producer was like, oh, perfect. All right, you can be the other host of the show.
Well, I don't think it's worth me getting back on Twitter, so.
Well, okay, the different times, you know. So the main point is that Mariner does not trust authority, and she's learned that she can't. And so a lot of the first season is authority showing us that it can't be trusted, and then our main characters kind of overcoming that. The quote was, when the crisis of trust is resolved positively, the child learns the virtue of hope. When resolved negatively, the result is pessimism. Children raised by consistently unreliable, unpredictable parents who fail to meet their basic needs eventually develop an overall sense of mistrust. This mistrust can cause children to become fearful, confused, anxious, all of which make it difficult to form healthy relationships. This, in turn, can lead to poor social support, isolation, and loneliness. So it all kind of gets worse just because it keeps getting worse.
So your hyperfixation. So I would say Star Trek probably qualifies as a special interest. That's something for as long as you can remember, long as it's been available, that's been something that has been of interest to you. And then you got me interested and it became a special interest of mine. And then that triggered then a hyperfixation because you had this inkling after listening to this interview from Mike McMahon that there was something that was some theme or something that he and the cast were referencing that you just couldn't quite nail. But then you found this 8 stages of psychosocial development and realized that each, and your theory is that each season or projected season of Lower Decks is a stage in the main character's psychosocial development. So each season correlates with one of these stages. Is that right?
Absolutely. Did I not say that part? Did I just get too far into like, this you is this thing?
You got a little excited, and that you did a classic info dump, which I'm super excited about. I really, really enjoyed it. And I think that is really such a good example of how we often info dump about these hyperfixations and why to a neurodivergent, if you ever have a neurodivergent in your face explaining like this, something that they love, that is a sign of such pure love and affection, because it is something that you're so excited about and you want to share with others that excitement. And one of the things that is not true about autistics, but often gets said, is that we are not empathetic. We don't show emotion. We're not capable of love or demonstrating love. And I think that, you know, while that may be true for some individuals on the spectrum or some that are neurodivergent, in many or most cases across, you know, being neurodivergent, the opposite is true. We experience a lot of emotion and a lot of empathy, maybe even more than other people, but the way we show it isn't the same. Just like, you know, there's this communication culture that neurodivergents have that is different than the communication culture neurotypical people have. And instead of saying, you know, outright saying I love you or sharing, you know, buying flowers, even though you do have some lovely flowers there, Miss Ellie, for your name day celebration, we show our affection by info dumping, among many other things. But this is one of the ways that a neurotypical person might not recognize as love. They're going to say, oh my gosh, why would this person not shut up about trains or clocks or Star Trek? But really, what is happening is that person who is giving you that information is letting you in and showing affection in like the best way possible. Which is so exciting. I have some questions about the process of this hyperfixation for you, El. Did you, because we know kind of how it started, how did it end? Because you wrote, if I'm recalling correctly, you wrote an essay on this.
That's open in front of me. It's 11 pages, 5,266 words. I had to break it up into two different posts on the Super Serious Business Star Trek discussion subreddit. I had a comment from an actual professor who gave me an A+ on the paper.
Nice. When you were reading these 8 stages of development and you started to see the correlation, did you have a goal in mind of writing an article or writing a paper?
No.
Were you planning on doing anything with that knowledge, or was it just, I want to learn all this?
It really just started as, there's a puzzle and I want to figure out how this puzzle works. And then once I figured it out and once things started matching up and slotting into place, then it became well, I kind of need to get this written down so that I can see how far this goes and how right or off I am. And then that kind of evolved into this essay that I've been adding to for the past several years, which is currently being made into a video essay.
Okay. And so is it that you, when you come back to it, because that's really interesting that you said that, because often a hyperfixation is fleeting.
Ah, yes.
Temporary. When you come back to it, are you as focused on it as you were the first time? Or is it that you just think, hey, today I should add a little bit to that essay and it's just kind of a drop here and a drop there? What is your level of re-engagement with the hyperfixation?
There's definitely the the sense of it being fleeting, because that initial, holy crap, I think there's something here, must learn all of the things and attach and sort and whatever. Like, that's done. I am thoroughly convinced that I'm right about this. And so just when a new season comes out, I read up on the next stage, and then I watch the new season a couple of times, and then I go, oh, that's where that lines up, and that's where that lines up, and that's where that lines up. And then I kind of just added to it as I went. Then, of course, Reddit kind of died the true death, and that Serious Business Star Trek discussion subreddit lost 80% of its readers. But I still made the essay, and I still have, you know, clips proving what I'm talking about, and still images to point things out. But I feel like it's not as much of a hyperfixation anymore as it's just developed into kind of its own special interest. And I have a handful of those that I just rotate through. So mm-hmm. for like, you know, a couple months, it'll be building Gundam models. For a couple of months, it'll be photographing flowers because the flowers are out. mm-hmm. And then, you know, when it's time for new Star Trek time, it's let's analyze this and, you know, cut GIFs out of it and put it into the Tenor keyboard and, you know, write little essays on stuff. And yeah, it comes back around from time to time. Mm-hmm. And it's a cheap hobby too. Like Paramount Plus is not that expensive, and I already own all the software. So,
So when you, what took you out of the first round of intense hyperfixation? Was it like, oh, I sort of tailed off and thought about it less and less, or was it like cold turkey?
I just wrapped up kind of a hyperfixation with The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, which came out like last year, and I played it a bunch when it came out, and then I came back to it once or twice, and I just finished, you know, a week or two of intensively playing that game because I wanted to 100% it, and I got it to like 90% and realized that last 10% was going to be a giant pain in the butt. And this thing just kind of happens where you sit down to engage with your hyperfixation and it doesn't grab you. And then you just don't have that drive to keep going with it, you know? Like you don't need to keep putting sand in that bucket. You put some sand in the bucket for a scoop or two, and then there's no happy chemicals in your brain. And you go, oh. Well, all right, we've moved on from that. So I think with this one, with this specific thing, with the Star Trek and this essay and this model, I got it out. I wrote the thing, I tweeted about it, I made some videos, and then there's nothing else to do with it. Like, you know, it's not the last Starfighter. No one's going to notice my high score and then come recruit me, you know?
So would it, because often part of the hyperfixation is that it engaging in it gives your brain a dopamine hit.
Mm-hmm.
And so you actually can engage with your hyperfixation almost limitlessly. And mm-hmm. it seems like it feeds you energy in a lot of the cases, but it definitely
yes.
hits that buzz in your brain of like, ah. You know, how does it feel when you engage with your hyperfixation? Like when it's at its height, how does it feel in your body? Can you tell?
It's a flow state where I'm not worried about anything else. I'm not really thinking about anything else. I'm focused here and now and on this thing. And I'm just being propelled along. You know, it's like I jumped in a canoe on a swift river. And every once in a while, I gotta, like, you know, paddle left or right a little bit to stay oriented and keep going. But the current is taking me. I'm not in control of pushing myself forward. I'm not necessarily needing to paddle myself forward. I'm just going. And it's mm-hmm. that sense of effortless creation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did anything replace this hyperfixation when you moved on to something else? Was it immediate? Was it?
Well, there's that special ennui of when one hyperfixation drops off and then you're just kind of standing around waiting for something else to show up, like, you know, waiting for a bus in the rain. I don't care where the bus is going. Just get me out of the rain. I could not tell you what it was. If I'm remembering the timeline about correctly, I actually think realizing I was trans happened right at the end of this one.
So that
could have been, that might have pulled me out of that fixation a little bit.
I have to say, most hyperfixations are not as drastic or life-changing as realizing you're trans. That is, that's a special case. Now, there is a huge overlap between the neurodivergent community and the LGBTQIA+ community. For certain, you and I are both card-carrying members, so, you know, that does happen. It is fairly common, but it isn't probably the most common experience. I don't want somebody is going to listen to this podcast and go, apparently if I watch Star Trek, I turn queer. Ugh.
Ugh. God, I wish.
That'd be great. Oh my goodness. But this is something that you go back to. Do you still watch Star Trek?
Well, of course. We are in the golden age of Star Trek. There was multiple shows going on at once because Paramount owned the rights to the show. Paramount owned the rights to the movies. And CBS owned the right to the show. And for decades and decades and decades, they were separate entities. And after this big merger a few years back, they started pumping out, there was like 7 new shows. A couple of those have finished and a couple of those have moved off of Paramount's block, but there's still a lot of really good, really new Star Trek coming out. And mm-hmm. It's a very pleasant hobby to have. Mm-hmm. Like somebody said, Star Trek is one of the very few sci-fi shows that starts with the premise, we're going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I find that very comforting.
Does this still give you a dopamine hit when you go back to it and look? Because this is not a current hyperfixation. Is that right? This is a recent one. Or are you I don't know the answer to that question. Are you engaging with this currently? Would you consider this a current one? Or is this just one of the more prominent ones that you've had?
It's something I'm working on right now, but the part where I have to say that I'm working on it is kind of indicative that it's not a current hyperfixation. Like I said, Tears of the Kingdom was the last one.
Your last hyperfixation. And that is a Zelda game, yeah?
Yeah, that's the most recent Zelda game for the Switch. The Nintendo Switch, sorry. I keep dropping my context. It's just such a large body of work that I've done so much with that, like, I'm like, well, you know what? I really should make this into a video essay because I really like doing video essays. And, you know, I've done a few other ones on this in smaller scale, but I haven't done this really big, you know, it's going to be 4 parts and probably 20 minutes per part. But it's not a current active hyperfixation. It doesn't have me by the throat.
Okay. What do you have any advice for the non-hyperfixated person in the life of someone who is hyperfixated? How do you know, what would you say to them when you have a loved one who is this excited about something? What should we on the other end of this do?
Smile and nod. So even if I'm explaining this huge and huge, seemingly important to me thing with all of this information and all of this nuance and data and specific references, I in no way expect anyone I'm telling this to learn all of this or even take any of this on board. I just really want to like talk about it and explain it. This is very much, it's penguin pebbling. I found this cool rock while I was on a walk today and it made me think of you. So here, have this cool rock. But instead of a cool rock, it's me talking about Star Trek for 20 minutes. And if you just sit there and smile and nod and, you know, show passing little bit of enthusiasm and generally just, you know, tolerating and listening, that's all we need. And that's all we really want, because that's you accepting our affection and our love by going, oh, that's neat. And if you can manage to not look horrendously bored the whole time, it feels really nice.
So what should listeners do if they want to read more or hear more about your 8 stages of psychosocial development and how they map to Star Trek Lower Decks?
Well, my great big essay on it is posted to the Daystrom Institute subreddit. I think we'll put a link in the notes to this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And if you check out my professional YouTube channel, Ellie Michaels Productions, at Ellie Michaels Productions, spelled just how you think it is, my video essay on this will be up shortly, and hopefully at least part of it will be up by the time this episode goes live. Or you can come find me, and I will tell you all about it to your face, whether you want me to or not.
And we will be recording a special just Zoom episode. Producer Matt will not be on the line unless he signs in and joins us, but we will be recording a special Patreon only episode on Zoom where you talk me through a good portion of the rest of this essay, and it will be available on our Patreon, which we are thrilled to share with everyone. As you know, or hopefully know, as loyal listeners, of course, of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult, we do have several different projects that are out there in the world to benefit neurodivergent adults and anybody who supports neurodivergent adults and, you know, promotes inclusion. One of them is, of course, our new neurodivergent professionals community, neurodiverse professionals community, I should say, which is NPC. So NPC will be starting soon and will be a wonderful networking group for all neurodivergent business professionals and those who support them. And information about that is on my website. We also have the Procrastination Fairy on YouTube as part of our umbrella. So our Patreon is there to support all of these different projects that we do to help the neurodivergent community. So our Patreon is patreon.com/theneurodiverseworkplace. patreon.com/theneurodiverseworkplace. And we will make sure that that link gets into our description and our notes. And we will have things there like special episodes that Ellie and I try to dust off the old record in the closet muscles and record on our own, and further information as well as more neurodiversity resource and all sorts of great stuff will be there. And yeah, that'll be an exciting addition to the Patreon catalog, I think, because I've got some questions about some of the further stages of development and how they map to Lower Decks.
I have answers. I have so many answers. Like, you're going to regret those questions. That's how many answers I have. It's good for me. Don't know if it's going to be good for you, but it...
What are you going to do if you watch the next season?
And it... Weep. Oh, my God. If this pattern... I'm never going to get the last Starfighter. Mike McMahon is never going to find me and be like, you cracked the code. Come on into the writer's room, person who has some experience as a professional writer but has never seen the inside of a writer's room. Yeah, no. If the pattern breaks, I am lost.
Okay. Well, we all have our fingers and eyes and toes crossed for you.
My brain sees patterns, and if the pattern goes away, my brain gets sad.
All right. Well, that will be a fun conversation to have and certainly to watch and listen to. So I think that about wraps it up for us today.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Miss Ellie, you wanna do your thing?
The thing where I talk about Star Trek. Oh, that thing. Okay,
that thing. The plugs, the closing of the show, the thing that you do.
This thing that I do. Yeah, well, that'll wrap us up for this episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult. If you like our show and would like to support us or support our work helping the neurodivergent community, please like and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe and like us on YouTube at Gifted Kid, Messy Adult. Add the bell icon, too, because reasons. You can find us on Patreon. Our link is in the show notes. And if you'd like to join us for, you know, future discussions or suggest some topics for future shows, you can email us at giftedkidmessyadult@gmail.com. People can find you, Jessica, my lovely wife, at coachjessicamichaels.com if you'd like a free consultation for stuff.
You are doing really well, and then you realize you don't exactly know what I do, and that is totally fine.
I just forgot how you phrase it. I know generally what you do. I tell people about it all the time.
I do neurodiversity coaching, consulting, and speaking. So if you are a neurodivergent adult who needs some job coaching, some career coaching, please don't be afraid to reach out. I also do speaking engagements at companies, schools, and not-for-profits all over the country. And then I do consulting at companies to help them become more neuro-inclusive. And we are also going to be kicking off, again, our neurodiverse professionals community, which we're very excited about. That's going to be a networking and resource sharing group for any adults interested in neuro-inclusion. And yeah, we're going, all information about all of those things is at my website at coachjessicamichaels.com. And yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. So please reach out.
Cool. And if you would like some video production done, you can find me at elliemichaelsproductions.com. Check out my stuff on YouTube at elliemichaelsproduction.com. Even if you don't really want to subscribe, hit a like button, make the numbers go up so that the malevolent AI masquerading as the algorithm takes notice on me and lets me keep a job. I think that'll about wraps it up, though. So until next time, take care of each other out there and watch Star Trek. It's so good.
Bye.